Welcome to Rewatchable for Veronica Mars. Today we'll be discussing Veronica Mars episodes 1 and 2, obviously. We'll be discussing the pilot and also credit where credit's due. All right, and with me I have Mitch.
Hey, we are all together and finally because I had a little bit of an issue with an alarm this morning. And let's just say West Coast to East Coast times don't really match up very prettily sometimes. Prettily is now a word.
No. And that's why I'm glad I'm in Central Time. So it's great for me. Sorry for you guys. We also have Gabrielle.
Good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, wherever you may be. I'm so excited to discuss Veronica Mars. Woo!
And we have Ariana.
Hi.
Hello. All right. So do we want to just jump in?
Well, I, for one, want to give my first impression of the show as compared to what in the hell I had before, because it's very different.
Please.
And if I had to just pick one impression, it's Kristen Bell, and it's her looks, because from the DVD cover, that's like the really well-known one where she's like sitting with her arms crossed and everyone else is behind her, and everything else that I know her from, I expected her to look a little bit older. But then seeing her in this pilot, she looks just so young and her hair is so short and I love it. She's so cute and flirty these days.
She's so tiny. She looks a lot different, I feel, in the pilot. I mean, obviously, because I'm sure they shot it a while before they did any of the other episodes, but I agree. She looks really,
especially
really
Wallace.
Young and really tiny.
Wallace looks extremely different because his hair is just so much more poofed up and half fro in the second episode. It's so funny.
I agree.
I mean, Kristen Bell's hair and her outfits just changed dramatically throughout the series, so it was just fun watching the first episode over again for me.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's just something about the hair. It's got like, she's got like this pixie cut, but the pixie cut goes like all over the place. Or like, not pixie cut, but
well, it's fun because she gets to do all these different kind of hairstyles with it, so you can really define a new episode or a new day really, really well with her, because even though she has shorter hair, she still has a lot of like variety of things she does. And I mean, that sounds like girly frou-frou talk, but it's really not. It's nice as like, you know, like you guys were saying, character development and just visually for the audience to designate different scenes and stuff. It's great. I love it. I love when they do new hairstyles on her.
Yeah. And I mean, as we move through, I guess, the series, you can tell where you are in time in terms of her hair. Like,
that's
as
cool.
We'll be talking about the flashback, she has the long hair and she's really, really girly. And then obviously when something happens to her, like it gets chopped short.
Yeah. I love her cheerleader hair days though. Those are fun.
All right. Any other first impressions before we kind of jump in, or anything that you observed, I guess that surprised you?
Overall, for the pilot, I thought it was really cute and fun sometimes, and occasionally really heart-wrenching. But really, honestly, I found the pilot kind of confusing. I had to watch it twice because there's so many intricate stuff going on. So maybe with that being said, it's a good time to transition into the synopsis so you can explain to me exactly what happened.
Sure. All right. So the synopsis for the pilot. Here we go. So we're introduced to Veronica Mars at Neptune High as she begins the first day of her junior year. She cuts down Wallace Fennell from the flagpole where he has been taped by the local biker gang, the PCHers, for snitching on them to the cops. If you remember, Wallace had pressed the panic button when he saw the underage biker steal from the local market grocery store where he had worked. So then Veronica makes a friend in Wallace and saves him from the wrath of the PCHers by exchanging the tape of the robbery for a tape that incriminates the local sheriff's department. Veronica despises Sheriff Lamb as he took her father's position after he was thrown out of office as sheriff, and because he laughed at her when she went to him after she was raped. Veronica's father is a private investigator now, and Veronica assists him on cases. Celeste Kane, the mother of Veronica's dead best friend Lily, and ex-boyfriend Duncan, the two of them are twins, she asks Keith to trail her husband, Jake, to find out if he's cheating. Veronica photographs Jake meeting someone at the Camelot and finds out that it was her mother. Her mother had left Keith and Veronica after Keith was thrown out of office for going after Jake Kane for his daughter's death. Lily, the Kane's daughter, was murdered on October 2nd of the previous year, and her killer, supposedly his name was Abel Koontz, is currently on death row. Veronica stood by her dad and was abandoned by her friends, which included Logan and her ex-boyfriend Duncan. She's unsure why Duncan broke up with her before Lily's death, and Logan is cruel to her and taunts her about her mother's alcoholism, abandonment, even her mother was a little loose, so he kind of taunts her on that too. And then at the end of the episode, we see her retaliate against Logan by planting a bong in his locker, and that's what leads to the whole confrontation at the end where he tries smashing her car. So that's kind of a short overview, little bit of characters, and a little bit of the plot, which we can obviously jump into now. All right. So let's jump into it. First and foremost, what are your guys' opinions on the opening song, We Used to Be Friends by the Dandy Warhols?
I love it.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite songs. And whenever I hear it, I get really excited. I think like a lot of Veronica Mars fans, because it sums up Veronica and how she starts the show very well with, you know, we used to be friends. She used to be friends with all these people. Now everything has changed and she doesn't really know how to find her place in the world. And that's kind of the point of the series. And it's also just nice to hear again as a Veronica Mars fan. I always giggle and squeal when I hear it.
Oh, me too. It's so hard not to dance to. I actually listened to it a few times on repeat before we started recording. And so it just it gets me pumped up, and it's fun. And like you said, it completely talks about the plot in a way that is just so special for a song to do.
Now, Superfans, was this a song that was made specifically for the show, or did it already exist before, like the One Tree Hill opening?
I believe it existed before.
I think so as well.
I think Rod Thomas just really liked it, and it obviously fits really well. And I believe he just kind of chose it and say, hey, this is what we're going to use.
Neat. Yeah, and you're right. Mm-hmm. It is upbeat, but at the same time, it has a really dark undertone to it because it talks about we used to be friends, and it has almost like a CSI vibe to it where you can imagine like, yeah, happening in the background, you know, not real people screaming, but the CSI opening has that scream in the song. I can't remember what it is. It's popular and everything. Anyways. But it feels like that same theme to me, and it feels like they're going to be like kind of grisly, grueling scenes that could happen to this song, even though it's fun and upbeat, and it would work as like an ironic statement, you know?
That's what I was thinking, because it fits so perfectly with like the we used to be friends, but it's also, like you said, Mitch, kind of ironic, because she obviously thinks about these people all the time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even things like when Wallace's character ever shows up, In the beginning, they always have, it makes me really nervous, they have a body drawn in chalk on the pavement that shows up next to his name, because there are little things that show up next to everyone that kind of represent them. Like, for instance, when it's Veronica's dad, they show handcuffs to show his involvement in the police enforcement, or what he used to have. So that just makes me a little bit thrown off kilter, and like I said, it feels a little CSI there, and that's cool, but I just don't like that it has to happen with Wallace. I mean, if either it's someone close to him dies, he's involved in someone's death, or he's killed himself, and at any point in this whole entire show, not that he kills himself, but he is killed himself, that would make me just so damn upset, because this pilot really made me love Wallace. It really did.
Well, maybe what the chalk could represent is he's taking the place of her, or he's, you know, kind of assuming that place of her old best friend who did die. So that maybe that's what that could represent.
Oh, you're so smart.
That's a good way to think of
it. Right, so that represents Lily's body, not Wallace's.
Perhaps. I mean, we'll see. But just a little bit of history on We Used to Be Friends. It was the lead single from the Dandy Warhols' fourth album, and it was also used on an episode of The OC, and it came out in 2003, in April of that year, whereas Veronica Mars premiered in September 2004. So it did exist.
Good to know.
Neat stuff.
Yeah. And before we move on, I just have a quick question. You had said how the song has kind of like these two things where it's really upbeat, but it also has that undertone. And that just kind of made me think of what we were discussing in our introductory podcast about Veronica Mars in terms of darkness and how it kind of contrasts or compares to, oh my God, what's the name of the show? Pretty Little Liars. I was looking at our post on Hypebol with the podcast, and some people were talking about our conversation about that. Do you think that us saying it's lighter than Pretty Little Liars after seeing it, do you think that that's true? Because a lot of people were saying, or a lot of people were discussing how they don't think it's necessarily lighter.
I think that it presents its material in a lighter way, but I think that it tends to have even darker themes than Pretty Little Liars does, quite frankly. And without talking specifics of the episodes, there are discussions, I'd say, of hard drug use, I believe, within these two episodes that we're talking about. And if not, I'd be surprised if there weren't. There's obviously gang violence, which never happens in Pretty Little Liars. That's a very heavy theme to do with any kind of TV show. And, of course, there's a rape in this show, and, I mean, there's no scene for it, but... I just thought of my heavy drug use. Yes, there's a certain drug given out at a party. I was saying, I think that the show is darker than Pretty Little Liars, but the difference is in not even just the way it's written, not even just the way the actors act, but it's also in the lighting. And if I'm getting this right, I remember learning in one of my classes that this kind of lighting is not what Pretty Little Liars is. Pretty Little Liars, I think, was verticillo. Anyone out there can completely correct me. And that gives more dramatic shadows and, really deep, dark reds, blues, and blacks and everything. And this show has a lot more like neon and kind of 90s fun colors. I know it's early 2000s, which a lot of people still confuse with 90s, I think. But this show still has, I wouldn't say like anything like a Full House vibe, but like it's just it's a little bit more. Hey, we're in here for, sorry for the loudest plane ever, we're in here for a bit of a party time. We're gonna hang out a little bit more than we would at Pretty Little Liars. That's the vibe I get from it, you know.
Okay,
well, yeah, I agree.
I was just interested.
I was just gonna say that I think Veronica is really sarcastic at times, as we saw during the pilot episode, and that kind of gives to the lighter feel. But I agree that they definitely take on darker topics than Pretty Little Liars, but they present it in a way that, you know, although it's hard for viewers to watch, viewers can still watch and not be turned off by it.
I agree.
I completely agree. I just wanted to get your opinion because I thought that was an interesting discussion that people were having. Before we move on to more plot points, speaking of discussion, we had a few fan tweets come in to us about our first episode. So, since they're kind of before we start talking, like they just talk about the podcast in general, I just wanted to read them out really fast, if that's okay with everybody. So we have one from Rios in 92, and they say, I'll be looking forward to that podcast. I haven't watched the series in a long time, so it'll be fun to listen to. Laura, I'm so sorry if I butcher this. Jürgensmeier, I've seen you a lot on the comments for everything, and you are awesome. But she says, a long time ago, we used to be friends. We watching Veronica Mars for Hypebol's rewatchable podcast. So excited. I really like how you threw the we used to be friends in there. I think that's perfect. And our last, yeah, it's great. Our last one is from Sage McKay, and she tweeted us saying, rewatchable love. The pilot is one of the best I've seen. Ah, yes. I agree. It's probably one of the better pilots I've seen of any TV show. Like, I know it's really hard to get TV shows off the ground and you have to make your pilot perfect, but I feel like Veronica Mars just nailed it.
You know, one show I was thinking of when I was watching this pilot was, I think it was Awake with, I could be getting the actor's name wrong, but the guy who plays Malfoy's dad in Harry Potter, isn't it?
Jason Isaacs.
He did the show Awake. Am I wrong on that name? No. At least?
He did that?
Yeah, he did.
And that was like That's a really world-renowned episode. Like, everyone was going gaga over the show. It's since been a canceled show, but this reminded me of Veronica Mars in that it seemed like this episode just had, you know, of course, so much to set up, but it still had a great independent plot that if you were to watch it as one singular episode, it really could have ended there, and I, of course, would be very upset, but it would work almost as like a mini-movie.
Mitch, you just blew my mind. I did not recognize him without his flowing blonde locks.
I know. He's like Gary Oldman, because he changes in every movie and role that he does, and it's just so strange to see him, of course, outside of this blonde wig.
I'm used to seeing him in the blonde wig and then also as Captain Hook. Like, anything other than that, it takes me a minute.
Wait, was he Hook in Hook?
He was Hook in the live-action Peter Pan with Jeremy Sumpter.
Oh my god, he was?
Oh wow.
Yeah, he was Hook this in is crazy. Mr. Darling. I believe I'm correct. I hope I'm correct.
That's insane. Yeah, that's weird. I hate when that happens. Okay, well, we're speaking of blonde wigs. Can we talk Veronica hair? Because I have a feeling we're wearing a blonde wig for a lot of these scenes. And I didn't think that first when I watched this pilot, because we'd flash back to scenes where she'd have longer hair, and I'd be like, all right, so they just filmed that before she got her haircut. But it happens way too frequently. That has to be a blonde wig, right?
I think so, but it looks so natural.
It really does. It fools me.
You have flashbacks in so many of the episodes, especially in season one, that, I mean, I really don't see how else they could have managed it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what about her normal hair? Is that just all normal hair? Is she ever wearing a wig when she has like a pixie cut and it's a really funny hairstyle where it's like sticking out in all directions or something?
She'll wear wigs that are not necessarily her own hair color. I can say that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but nothing like where there's something weird going on. There's a long one, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. So for the newbies, what do you think the show is about just by watching the pilot? What do you get a sense of? Do you think?
You go first, Ariana.
I mean, I think it's ended up being exactly what Mitch said. It would be about Veronica trying to figure out who murdered her friend. And hopefully it seems like it'll be about Veronica getting over the death of her friend and, you know, making new friends or maybe reconnecting with old ones, as we see in the second episode. So, moving on with her life.
And if I had to bounce off where you're going, Ariana, I'd say that the show is also about the redemption of her father in her father's name, because she chose to stick with her father in the decision to go after the Father Kane. So that decision basically is what haunts her every day, what's changed her, for the majority of what's changed her, I should say, because there's another large plot point that did that. and it's just her learning to deal with those two large events in her life and how she's developing into this detective persona so that she can kind of shove those other less desirable parts of her life away and have something fun to concentrate on.
Yeah, so
it would be good to talk about that later at some point, whether it was a good idea or not for her to stick with her dad.
Definitely.
Believing him or trusting him and his conclusions.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I think we definitely could, especially as we learn down the line more about her mom. I think we can kind of delve into that, too. But as far as Veronica as a person, do we like her as a protagonist?
Here's where I think I'm going to differ from everyone else.
Okay.
I don't like her as a protagonist for the things she does, but I like her as a protagonist because she's fun to watch. Because I don't like how much lying, stealing, and cheating, and deceiving, and pretending to be someone else she does. It's just very off-putting when someone's willing to do that with a bat of an eyelash. You know, it's just so easy for them. It's second nature for them to do a lot of horrible things. And it just makes me feel like there's one less nice person out there in this world, because as much as she's helping people out, she's also sneaking into garages. She's also, you know, starting fires, and she's also pretending to be someone on the phone. She just is just not a very conscious person of her decisions, you know.
But you don't think it matters that she's doing it for the right reasons? That's not like she's doing
it. I still don't think it matters, because I think that that's part of her character, that she doesn't care what she's doing for the right reasons or not anymore, leading off of her father's decision, because he didn't care if he was doing something that was very unpopular in accusing Mr. Kane of his daughter's death, that's where I think she reflects something in her own life on her own actions. And I think that it would be nice if her father kind of sat her down and gave her a little talking to. It wasn't exactly as nice as he is about all the horrible things that she does on a daily basis that he completely witnesses and is just like, oh, you crazy kids.
So do you think that there's any sympathy? Do you have any sympathy at all for the fact that the events that have happened have made her this way, have made her so cynical? Like, no, is there,
yeah,
any,
of course I do.
There?
Yeah, I've, okay. I have plenty of sympathy that she was is being raised up in this very tumultuous environment where basically the only way to survive is to lie, steal, and cheat. That's the only way, like I was saying, she can hide her true feelings or true personality or anything else, because she can put on these sleuthing detective shoes and she feels like she's invincible. She can do anything and nothing's going to harm her because she's had so much harm done to her, you know? But it, like I said, it doesn't make me like her anymore because it makes me just not trust her, you know? What's she going to do even that she's not going to tell the audience? Is she a reliable narrator even?
Okay, yeah. I can understand that. And we'll have to check back in to see if your opinion on her changes at all, like as the series goes on. I think that would be interesting to kind of track.
What did you think, Ariana, as another newbie?
It's so interesting. I had like the opposite thoughts of you. I mean, I had no problem with her lying, cheating, and stealing. But then again, I'm also a big Lannister fan on Game of Thrones. So, but I was actually wondering if she was too likable. Because, I mean, I love that she's so smart and funny and witty and, you know, that she's take charge, as especially seeing a woman protagonist like that on television. But sometimes I was wondering, I think it gets better later on, but in the pilot, was she, did that make her unapproachable? Like, she was like a superhero. She could do anything. And so that's what made me a little worried in the pilot. But I think she does get better later on.
Yeah, okay. I can see where you're coming from. And she was very superhero-ish when she would, let's say, deny Wallace a seat at her table. Like, no, I just rip off my clothes, turn into Superwoman, and that's the moment where you can speak to me and interact with me. But when I'm Clark Kent, you can't deal with me at all because this is my private time. I live alone, you know? So I can see that you'd think that she's too likable because she's too perfect and she doesn't need anything else in her life. But to me, that doesn't come off as being more likable. That comes off as just being a little bit cold and distant. But once again, she has plenty of good reasons to be at that point in her life, you know?
I think over time, you guys, I think, will come to a middle ground. Because I think Veronica does have these rough edges, but that's what makes her all the more likable in the end.
Right, and I would never expect a character to be perfect. Those are her flaws, and that's great because they are major flaws, but they are ones that she has to deal with every day, and the show's written in such a way that it's so intelligent that I want to see how she's going to overcome everything that she does that's wrong in a day, you know? What she's going to lie about today, and how she's going to get out of the situation that she just shoved herself into.
Gotcha. Yeah, we'll keep tracking that and kind of see how things change after the first few episodes. Let's move on to, let's see, Duncan. So I misspoke before. Duncan and Lily were not twins, but Duncan still obviously is Lily's brother. What do we think about him as a character as of right now? Do you have any thoughts about him? He's kind of aloof a lot of the time, so it's hard to get to really know him, but any thoughts so far?
In the pilot, I just did not like him. I thought he was so strange. He'd never talked. He was like a mute. And it was bizarre to me.
And I didn't like that one flashback scene we had where his hair was pushed back and he was going out of the pool, because there's just no way for anyone to look pretty as they're coming out of water. And they were trying to like play him up to be this most gorgeous Edward Cullen-ish man you've ever seen, and then we see him like blinking water out of his eyes and his hair is pushed back and he's like, hi Veronica.
He was even sparkling because of the pool water.
He really was. And it was just, I mean, it's so vain, but like I just was like, this guy's kind of derpy. I don't know why he's like a, you know, such a hottie to Veronica, because to me he just looks like a dork.
Oh no.
I mean, He has a very sweet heart, though. So yeah. I just kind of forget about those dorky moments easily, and that's fine to be a dork. It really is, but it doesn't make sense for the character that he's supposed to be to me quite yet. But maybe it will change in the future because he does do some pretty chivalrous things.
I think Duncan, I mean, I thought he was being set up to be her Prince Charming in a way, especially in the pilot episode with the lighting and with the flashbacks. But as you said, he is kind of mute a lot of the times, but then he does kind of tell Logan, who we're going to get to in a few minutes, to stop it or back off, but only after Logan has kind of gone after it a bit.
Yeah, but he's not assertive about it. He's just like, back off. And then he like goes off and stares like at the beach.
He has a lot of teen angst, too. You're right.
I mean, I guess he has good reason to be angsty.
Yes, he has very good reason to be teen angst. It's one of the few times, I think, that I've seen teen angst in a show and have not really been upset about it, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, not to, like, dangle something in front of you, but there's, like, a little bit more to the angst that we find out later. But there is definitely, he definitely has that teen angsty. I think for every show, you kind of have to have that one character, I feel, that is just kind of brooding or has that really angsty look on his face. Like, I know in Supernatural, it's Sam Winchester's always brooding or, you know. So he's kind of not a token character, but Duncan is that character who does fill that role.
Yeah, he needed to exist. I agree.
Yeah. And what about Keith Mars, Veronica's dad? Do we like him? Are we kind of...
I like him.
Okay, good.
Mitch doesn't, apparently. He thinks he's a bad parent.
Oh, no. Don't take that as me not liking him. I really do. I like him just as much as I like Lorelai Gilmore. They both treat their children in a very friend-like way, and it's cute and it's fun, but then they just don't parent them correctly sometimes. Well, I'm a parent. Because they just let them get away with too much, and that becomes with that best friend feeling, because I feel like he'd be scared to yell at Veronica for anything that she's doing. Whenever she does something really bad, she just kind of sarcastically plays it off, and he just is almost forced to just, you know, swallow it and just pretend it wasn't big. And other than that, though, he's such a fun person to watch and just be around, because he has a very, very hard layer. But once you break that down, he's the most fun and sweet guy you've ever talked to. He's great.
Hey, but who's your daddy?
Yeah. He does reprimand Veronica, though, in this episode when she, you know, follows Jake Kane and takes pictures and wants to pursue the license plate issue, as we saw. So he can be forceful, but, I mean, I think he realizes how hard this year has been on his daughter and, you know, just trying to deal with that himself and deal with the events that's been going on.
So basically,
and he's probably just so grateful that she's sticking by him, too.
Yeah, that's a good point. She has a lot that she's doing for him nowadays, so it's almost like he's giving her a lot of get-out-of-jail-free tickets, because she's just such a nice person to him to take up his side.
Yeah, I agree. I love Keith, and I love him even more as, like, time progresses. Even from the first time I ever watched it to now, like, there's still so much love for Keith Mars. Let's move on to Logan. Let's talk about Logan.
My favorite character in all of Veronica. So I'm just going to point that out. I love Veronica. I think Logan, as you guys will see, and as Mitch mentioned, is a really complex character, even in the pilot. And I think he becomes more complex and his character grows. And he's that bad boy at first. And how can you not like this jerk, obviously, who's tormenting Veronica, but at the same time is really hurt by the death of his girlfriend and, you know, the breakup of the friendship.
Yeah, you can totally see both sides of Logan kind of every time you look at him, because you can tell why he's acting the way he is, like for some things and for other things, he's just a mystery. So I think he's a really great character. I'm really glad he's in there.
And he had a really great line in the flashback where he is, of course, you know, going to Veronica and asking her why her father is going after Mr. Kane, and she is just sitting there dumbstrucken as he's almost crying, or is, and he's saying something to the effect of, "This was my girlfriend and your best friend. What are you doing, Veronica? Why are you doing this to yourself?" And It's a really great overarching theme for the whole entire show, I'd even go out to say, because that decision to choose her father alienated a lot of people like Logan, and it changed a lot of people like Logan forever and ever. So it just shows the large impacts that Veronica has on people she even doesn't even care for anymore. Logan is a new person, not only because Lily's dead, but because he has seen what he thinks is betrayal to the umpteenth degree. You know, he's insert some sort of Macbethian tragedy Shakespearean thing here, you know, like, and I think that he's all the more interesting because he has that very deep element of betrayal inserted in him.
As we'll see, Logan obviously was close to Lily and he's best friends with Duncan, but he was also just close to the Kanes in general, so that the, you know, accusation of Jake Kane does affect him more than most.
Okay, I'm gonna do the unpopular opinion now and say that in the pilot, just watching the pilot, I did not care for him. I thought he was so icky, and he just, I don't know, he creeped me out.
Hello? I was picking up the phone in the background. Yes, he is. He's kind of icky. And he has a very early 2000s bully feel to him. Like, if I think of, like, I don't even know, like, what's not another teen movie. There's bullies in that movie that I swear look just like him. And they act just like him. I'm thinking of the people who do something with pizza in the cafeteria with a certain part of hair from their body. That's what it reminds me of. But then again, he has a sweet side that we never saw to bullies like those in Not Another Teen Movie that makes me really feel very strongly toward him. And I agree, wasn't it, Gabrielle, you were saying he's your favorite character in the show. I can honestly see where you're coming from. I'm inclined to say he's leaning towards that.
What do you guys think of when he smashed Veronica's headlights? What do you think? I mean, do you think that was just retaliation, or what do you think was the root of
that? She deserved it. She really, I mean, that's unpopular too, but she deserved it. Holy crap. She, like, planted drugs in his locker. That's really big stuff.
But he kind of started it, didn't he? Like, why doesn't he just leave her alone if he doesn't like her? Why does he have to instigate all these things?
Because he needs answers. He needs to know why she betrayed him and the Duncans.
That's not what he was doing. He was just being, like, rude and annoying.
Well, right, but
he was mean to Wallace.
You're right, he was. I just think that he's out to make her life horrible now, though, because of that betrayal, you know?
Yeah, and I guess the way he sees her betrayal, he also lost, like, this other friend, too. Not that him and Veronica, I don't think, were ever that close while they were dating their significant others, but I think that's kind of one other person that was kind of ripped away from him, if that makes sense.
It was. It absolutely was.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so Wallace. Show me some love for Wallace.
I'm giving you some love for Wallace.
I love me some Wallace.
Wallace is the best. He's such a great friend for her.
I love his afro. I just want to pet it. This looks like full of, like, you know how, like, in Mean Girls, the one girl's hair is so big and full of secrets? His hair just feels like it's so big and full of love and hugs.
I think that's Sugar the best quote ever.
Yes, love and hugs.
Love and hugs. Episode title. Bam.
Done. Wallace he's so hard not to love. I feel like he's one of those characters right away that you can really just connect with. I feel like he's one of the most relatable characters because he walks into this whole situation just in the middle or in the aftermath, just like we do. So I think it's really easy for us to not only like him, but sympathize with him or relate to what he's going through.
Yeah, and you know what? He reminds me of the type of character Ellen Page is in an Inception. We need someone that knows as little as we do about Veronica so that we can be let into this world as easily as we can, because there's so much drama, there's so much backstabbing, there's so many double layers to characters that we need to have someone that's just at the blank slate that we are so that we can just have Veronica at her I don't know you, here's my personality level.
And he comes up with some of the best lines of the series, as we'll get to in a few minutes. He's just, he's definitely real.
He's, like, just as funny as Veronica. He's just more subtle.
He's wonderful. He's so wonderful. As much as I'd like to keep gushing over Wallace, let's move on to Weevil.
He's my favorite.
Good. I remember you were tweeting me when you were watching the first episode. You're like, I really want to see more Weevil.
Yeah, so. I was worried because I was like, oh, is he a bad guy? Is he like in the gang? But I like him. I don't care if he's a bad guy.
I just think he's really interesting. Like, first of all, he's very witty for a biker gang member, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It's like the other ones just kind of sit around dumbstruck at some of the things Veronica says and does, but he has a retort almost immediately.
Yeah.
He combats some of the stereotypes that we'd think of like a biker gang member. And I think, you know, Wallace says to Veronica, you know, you're a marshmallow, Veronica Mars. And I think Weevil, in a lot of ways, is similarly a marshmallow.
But he's a burnt marshmallow because he's really hard on the outside, but he's soft and gooey on the inside.
Yeah, but I think he has a soft spot for Veronica. He likes her sass.
Yeah. Yeah, the two marshmallows fit together. They really do, though.
And, I mean, we'll see more of him, I can promise, as the series goes on. And even episode 2, which we will get to in this episode, it was kind of revolving around him. So we got to see more about him. And I think that he just makes himself likable no matter what he does. Because he's for his family. He's usually for doing the right thing. But he also knows how to take care of himself and stick up for anything that he needs to.
So. Okay, but since we're talking about the gang right now, like, how legit of a gang are they? Because I found it really unbelievable that at the end, she was like, oh, well, Wallace has the only copy of this. And then he's like, oh, can I have it? And Wallace is like, no. And then they just let him walk off, and he's just staring there. And I was like, he literally has it in his backpack. Like,
jump
what
him.
Is wrong with you? Yes.
You're a gang member. You do that kind of thing.
I think they're legit, as we'll see with some of their activities, but they're also high schoolers, and they know that messing with Veronica, her dad, you know, is not necessarily the sheriff anymore, but they do respect him, as we'll see, and, you know, they don't want to mess with this girl, you know, because who she is, and because, you know, at her heart, she's a really good person.
But how brave of Veronica to talk to someone that is just so intimidating. It's amazing that he is available for her at any time to talk, because you would think he would just blow her off and be like, all right, well, whatever, this pretty little white girl wants to talk to me, I don't care. If she's gonna mess around with me, I'm just going to, I don't know, punch her lights out or whatever horrible things gang members do. So to me, it's strange that, like we're all saying, he has that soft spot for Veronica, so that has to come off as something more than just I think she's cool. I think that might be something of a love interest, because that is just strange how, like you were saying, Ariana, that he's able to just let Wallace walk away with the tapes and not let it be a big special deal, you know?
Well, also, he also just, he experienced what Veronica can do. He was just witness to it, like, a few minutes before. He knows how cunning she is. So I think it's respect, and I think they're also a little bit intimidated by her because she can stand up to them, whereas other people don't.
But not physically, though. That's the thing. We're not thinking of how she is a petite young woman who can easily be taken over by anyone over the age of 16 that's a male, just simply because of, you know, biology, you know? It's just unfortunate fact that at that age, I would say a lot of men are old enough that they could easily take advantage of a small woman of her stature. So that's why it makes me really upset to see her talking to someone who is, let's just say, jacked up with muscles and, you know, I'm sure carries some kind of concealed weapon or something that we just haven't seen yet, and is just as easily punching her old best friend, Logan, as he is chatting with her about the paint job on his bike. You know, it just is really weird that she's not more concerned that she's talking to a gang member, as silly as the gangs they may be.
Well, we'll find out how silly they are. The gang plays a role, or the gang is very present in a lot of this season and even the next one, so we'll find out.
Well, I have a question about the gang in general. So they're able to get a lot of things done during the daylight, which is really strange to me. They have a lot of fights just right on the beach, and everyone's hanging out and throwing their frisbees and flying their kites, but in the meantime, someone's being beaten to a bloody pulp on the edge of death. You know, I'm just like, what? Huh? What's going on?
I mean, they have a math test or something in the morning, so they can't stay up really late. They have to do it during the day.
So, high school gangsters.
So they're high school gangsters, and they're just kind of like not really like into this whole gangster life as much as you would
think
they would
gangsters,
be, right?
So they're a little bit more laid back.
Isn't it kind of scary though to see gangsters in a TV show for you guys? Because to me, I've never really experienced gangsters in real life, and like this to this effect, you know, like I never really saw people beaten up on the street as I'm walking by and flying my kite. That's just so foreign to my life. I don't know. Does anyone else have like experience where, you know, you saw something like equivalent to this violence during the day or something? Is this something that happens?
I mean, I've grown up in California where, you know, Veronica Mars is set. I've never seen that, obviously, but, you know, it is a television show, and I applaud them for going out there and, you know, having this storyline and having this element to the show, as I think we'll discuss later on.
Where I went to school, there was quite a few gangs, and that does actually happen quite a bit. So that's why I was asking if they were like legit gang members or beach gang members.
Because you know the difference at this point, there, right? There's like beach gang members and ones that are legitimately scary, right?
Yeah.
Yikes. Well, yeah, it almost makes me uncomfortable to even talk about this gang violence, which I think is a testament to Veronica Mars, the show, because that just shows that the show is going to go there, and it's going to do it, and it's not even going to apologize for the big topics it brings up in this show. Yeah. And it's not just like a typical like, oh, this show's like Glee. It brings up really big. No, it brings up real life things, though. It doesn't bring them up in a fictionalized manner. It brings them up in a very real feeling way.
It does. Let's move on to the one character who the show pretty much revolves around, but we haven't talked about yet. Let's move on to Amanda Seyfried's character, Lily. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it's such a treat. I watched Veronica Mars after Amanda Seyfried became big. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a treat to see her in this role. And especially now with her success in Les Mis and Mamma Mia, it's just neat to see her play in a different role. And I think this episode it shows that she's, you know, she's just Veronica's best friend. We don't really know more about that at this point. We don't know, you know, was she manipulative? Was she really nice? We don't know much about her personality at this point, other than Veronica really misses her.
Yeah, she just has the typical, like, rich girl stereotype right now. She's not a fully fledged person.
And her one line reminded me a lot of Allie from Pretty Little Liars, because she goes, I have a secret. That's the only thing that Allie ever talks about in her flashbacks, too. So I was just like, oh, God, I don't want to see the same story. It's not. Thank God.
No.
It's not.
No.
That is just like a hinted thing, and it's nothing that's really even discussed, but it's something that's shown in every single, here's what you missed on the last Veronica Mars, in the beginning of every episode, so I know it's going to have importance. And it's, someone has to get it out there. Someone just, if you know it offhand, throw out the line about when it's raining. We all know we were thinking it. I was a little bit, you know, sometimes. I'm talking to mean girls,
I was sitting there. Yeah, I was sitting there watching, I think even the first time I saw it, but just watching her doing the car wash in their... I don't know if it was a cheerleading uniform or like a gym uniform, right. But at that moment, she looked exactly like Karen Smith.
She really did.
Yeah. And so that was a little distracting, but it's also kind of funny because they're two completely different characters.
I just really hope that there's no rain that she's involved in this show, because I might just lose my explicitive, because I would die of laughter. I wouldn't help it. It would be so, like, I guess ironic that such a serious show would, well, I mean, at that point, it's serious because it's going back to a dead girl's flashbacks, but that such a serious show, I guess, would harken back to something that's just so hilarious.
Question. So we know that Logan and Lily dated. Can you see that at this point? Like, do you believe that for you newbies?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ariana, do you
also? I mean, they're both stereotypes. of people. They're not really real people to me as far as it goes in the pilot episode, so I can totally see it.
Yeah, very well put. I agree. They are very on like a first slate right here. Like, I know we said we saw more to Logan, but we didn't see what it was. And we also saw so little of Lily that we have no other way of interpreting her other than the ex-best friend or the dead best friend or the ditzy rich girl. And other than that, I think I'm really going to have my eyes opened up to Lily and Logan, of course, as we go on. They're going to strip those really fake layers off of themselves, and they're going to show what their secrets are. The thing that she gets them talking about will be revealed. I know it's going to have to. It's the Chekhov's gun, you know?
Yeah, it will be. In time, it will be.
Right now what seems...
No, go ahead.
Sorry. What seems most unbelievable is that Veronica would be friends with them at this point. But we'll see.
Well, she was a very different person, and I think... Can I mention the rape at this point? Is this a good...
Yeah, we're going to go into it. Actually, that's our next topic. So please lead us into it.
Well, I think that she could have been friends with them before she was raped, because after she was raped, she basically realized how dangerous life can be and how you can't really live life on the edge anymore. You can't have silly, willy-nilly little friends who are going to put you in dangerous situations. If anything, you're going to put yourself in that dangerous situation so you know how to get out of it. And that's where I see her jumping away from friends like Logan, and if Lily was still alive. And I mean, of course, then again, Lily's death also influenced a lot of her personality changes and why she could no longer be seen with those kind of people anymore as this new short-haired Veronica, Ariana. Do you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I think she doesn't trust people.
I was on mute, yeah.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I don't think she trusts people anymore. After her rape, she doesn't know who to trust. She went to that party and she was given a drug, you know, that she didn't even know about. And then with Lily's death, you know, everyone abandoned her and her mom abandoned her. So she doesn't know who to trust. So she automatically changed from, you know, this person she used to be.
And can we talk about who we think might have done the rape as newbies at this point? Because I have a very strong idea of who it's going to be.
I was just
going to
ask you, Mitch.
Really? Yeah.
Okay. Please. Okay. So I really hope no one hates me for this. I really hope no one hates me for this. Okay.
You don't know enough about the show for them to hate you.
Okay. You sure? Okay. Are you positive?
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's Troy.
That's really interesting. Why do you think it's Troy?
I think it's Troy because he's a little bit too convenient. He just shows up in her life when he needs her, and he's creepy. He's not cute. The way he flirts with her is just, like, too much. I don't think he even shows up in this episode, so it's not fair to analyze him in 101 because he's not there. But when we get on to the things he does in 102, he is too assertive. He is a little bit too alpha male for me, and he just has what seems like a control issue. He wants to manipulate the ultimate manipulator, and I just could see him doing something like raping someone for the love of that power over that person. And also, he has a very, very, what looks like to him, legitimate reason for raping someone, because he's friends with the Duncans, and he, you know, would probably put some blame on downfall of the Duncans socially, or, you know, the father's accusations on Veronica, not even just her father. So those are all my reasons. And like I said, I hope no one hates me, because accusing someone of rape, even in a show, is a very big deal. But I've just had that feeling about him.
That's interesting that you automatically think of him as not a straightforward character. I think that's really interesting.
Mm. And I also like how you refer to the Canes as the Duncans, just because they are so revolved around Duncan.
Oh my god, I did.
So just wanted to point that out. Duncans. That I think it's a very funny slip.
Oops. So Ariana, who do you think the rapist is? I'm sorry if I influenced your answer.
Oh my god, you've just convinced me, Mitch.
Yes.
you've blown my mind.
I know. It's hard.
At first I thought it must be like Logan because he was like the bad guy, but then I was like, no, that's way too easy. Mm. And I thought maybe it's Duncan, but now after the second episode, I don't think it could be Duncan. But like Troy, that's so interesting because when he showed up, like I really liked him, but I also felt a little weird. Like, should I like him? He's like too much. He's too perfect. Mm. And there's something a little eerie about that.
Yeah, yeah. And that's another thing I've seen in a lot of media where someone that's too perfect could often be the rapist in the show because they are portrayed as needing to have everything, right?
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Right.
And so, I think I've seen that, yeah.
So I'm really glad that you guys didn't really spoil anything for us. I mean, hope you didn't. Because I was like, really I hope Danielle and Gabrielle don't just like...
We're trying not to. It's really tough. Yeah.
Usually when I'm like watching a show with my friends or something, or let's say this is a perfect example, I was playing Tomb Raider, the new one, and my boyfriend was playing the game right next to me, and he would tell me a really big theory and he'd love to know if he was right or not, but he's like, don't react at all, you cannot tell me if I'm right or wrong. So I just simply would have a poker face. So you guys better poker face us, because I don't want to be spoiled. I want to know when the audience should have known originally. I want this to be like a real aired TV show.
I promise I am choosing my words very carefully, which is hard sometimes, but I will. I don't want to take that away from you. So I will choose my words very carefully. And when we get to certain plot points,
then
I will just let it out. So
all right, it'll be good. Good.
So we're talking about the murder, the rape. There's also themes of abandonment and even adultery. How do you think that Veronica Mars as a TV show handles these things well? Because sometimes some shows will try to introduce it, and the way that they do it just doesn't feel right, or it seems like a cop-out with some things. Do we think that Veronica Mars handles this well, I guess is the question? Like thoroughly and in a light that makes it able for us to discuss?
I think so. I think it's hard to know just with the pilot because they just throw all these things at you. But mm-hmm. I think over time, we will see that they handle the issues of rape and murder and abandonment and adultery and everything else they throw at us very carefully. And, you know, with a sense of humor at times, but also not making light of the issues.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Gabrielle was saying, that the show doesn't try to make light of them. It just tries to show people dealing with them in an everyday situation. And sometimes people deal with, let's say, being raped by shutting themselves out from the world and becoming a sarcastic and kind of witty bitch. And that's what Veronica's character has led her to right now. But I feel like eventually we're going to see even more repercussions from that rape. And perhaps that's going to be, if not Troy's the rapist, even during some kind of intimate scene between those two, because she might have a flashback to that moment, etc., etc.
And I thought it was really good how they showed all the different reactions that one can have, because she's obviously in so much pain. And so it was really smart of her to go and report it, but then how horrible that nobody believed her. And so I can see, as much as like it hurts thinking about how she couldn't tell her dad, because I mean, I understand, because why would she tell him if nobody's going to help her? Because then he's just going to be in pain too.
Exactly.
So it's like the whole situation is so messed up.
And unfortunately, I think it's realistic for some people, which is really heartbreaking, but
really is,
but it's the truth. It's not, you know, a television show glossing over the issue with, you know, pretty colors.
Nowhere near. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can see how all of these things, including the rape, has kind of stuck with Veronica. And I think that's really important when a TV show or any sort of medium deals with these sort of topics. That it's not just kind of like a one-off thing that just happens and then you move on. Because you don't. So...
claps to you, Veronica Mars, the TV show, and the character.
And the characters. All right, I think we hit on pretty much all of the major plot points and characters and everything that we needed to for episode one. So let's move on to the fun part. What were everybody's favorite lines of the pilot? Mine, a lot of you took some of mine and I'll give them to the newbies, but mine was, well, if it isn't Smokey the Barely Legal.
What was that one? When did that happen?
When she, there was a firefighter who had started the fire in the sheriff's department. So the guy, I guess, who owed her a favor, that's how he greets Veronica. So it's not just like people that she knows intimately who knows of her ways, but it's this just random firefighter. We never see him again. And he just goes, well, if it isn't Smokey, the Barely Legal.
Well, I took that line as being you're 18. And I was like, what? No, she's not. So that's supposed to mean that she barely, her and her father barely got away with everything that they did and that they do.
I think it could be both. I think she's around 17, I think is a fair assumption, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think they're saying like 18 is legal. She's a junior in high school. So I think it was more like she's doing these things and she's barely legal.
It's interesting that the show starts off as a junior because that means we're going to have some college years. I know we're going to have college years. Don't react, but I think we're going to have to because this show shows a very old Kristen Bell, and I couldn't be convinced that she's a high school student at that point.
Oh, yeah. Mitch, favorite line.
All right. It's from my boy Logan. He said, that's right. My daddy took my T-Bird away, and you know what I won't be having? Fun, smash.
Best line ever.
For real, that's just so cute. I love when they go back to like these really old songs and like pop culture references that literally you would only get in a 2000s show. You wouldn't get that nowadays. It's so period. I love it.
Well, the show's just so witty. You'll like find that constantly, that it'll just be referencing stuff that you have to be smart to catch, and that's one of them.
It's almost like a Family Guy way, you know?
Mm-hmm. And the people you care about are the witty, or the people that you're kind of supposed to care about who are important to the plot, they're all witty. So they can all kind of keep up with each other, and they just throw things out like this nonstop, which what makes the show so great. One of the things that makes it great.
And like I said before, this show does relate a lot to Gilmore Girls, very obviously. It's from the same era, and it has a very similar feeling with the small town and the father and daughter with just the two of them and all that. And the greatest reference I think the show takes from Gilmore Girls is its ironicism, if that's a word, and its sarcasm, because the characters talk so fast or so quick and they come up with these great jokes that I could never think of ever if I ever tried. I'm never this funny, so kudos to the writers of the show too, because they are just like fabulous for having all these things in their head, you know?
Totally. Okay, Ariana, favorite line.
Okay, I had two. I couldn't pick because they were my two favorite characters. So I loved it when Weevil said, after that we come for you, your boy, and your little dog too. I just loved it. And I also liked it when Wallace, he like pretty much summed up Veronica Mars. And he said, underneath that angry young woman shell, there's a slightly less angry young woman who's just dying to bake me something. You're a marshmallow, Veronica Mars, a Twinkie.
Yes. And that's where the nickname Marshmallows comes from. So
that's the relation. I've heard that a lot with Veronica Mars.
Yes, that is the relation. That's where it comes from. Other fandoms have something that's kind of closer to the name, but ours is Marshmallows. So everybody here is an honorary marshmallow. So congratulations on being inducted. You're a marshmallow.
Oh my God, I just figured it out. Mars Marshmallow. That took me a while.
Okay. That works too. Yes. All right. And Gabriella. Favorite line?
Well, one of mine is what Wallace said about Veronica Mars being a marshmallow, because as a Veronica Mars fan, that's kind of obligatory. And then the other two are by Veronica. Again, I couldn't pick. So Veronica at the end of the pilot says, you know, there's basically like, if there's anything I've learned, the people you love let you down, which I think sums up her mentality really well throughout the series. So I just love that line because it's a lot of foreshadowing. And then her other line, and let's not forget Logan Eccles. Every school Or am I allowed to say this word before I go on? Mitch, podcast rules.
Say it, and
I don't know.
Yeah, you're fine. Go ahead.
Just making sure. Every school has an obligatory psychotic jackass. He's ours. That's just a genius line. Logan, as I've said, is one of my favorite characters in the show and in like a lot of shows, honestly. And so, and that line sums up what we think of him for a while.
Yeah, and it kind of it gives the outline of the stereotype that he's supposed to be portraying. So you kind of start there. Because I think that's how she introduces him, isn't it? That's the very first thing that you hear about Logan. Yeah.
That's why I love it.
And that reads as a novel. You know what I mean? It sounds like anything that you would hear from like any kind of young A female protagonist. Like Katniss might say that if she was in high school or something, you know?
Yes, I do know. I understand. But yeah, so I think that's a really good one. And that line really sums up what we're kind of told to think about Logan, but then we can learn more about him and choose for ourselves. So, all right. So yes, that was episode one. So let's move on to episode two, credit where credit's due. We've already learned about most of the characters. There is one character that is thrown in, which we will discuss in a minute. But let's first talk about class divisions. Because class divisions does come up a lot in Veronica Mars. It's very, not very important to the plot, but it is the plot. Like, that's how a lot of things are divided. You have all of the rich kids. They're all called the O-Niners because that's their zip code. And so they kind of form cliques because of that. What did everybody think about the class distinctions or how it's treated?
It's cool because it shows that people will break those class distinctions whenever there's a situation in which it needs to happen. And that situation right here was when, you know, basically Weevil decides he's going to trust Veronica a little bit more in this episode. And that happens, you know, in and out really, but it does happen eventually. And it's nice to know that someone that is Hispanic and is from poverty and that is of a gang can also get along with someone who's Caucasian and is in the lower middle class and is part of the law enforcement, really. Those are very clashing classes, but it makes sense that they came together to kind of go against the O-Niners, you know? Did I say that right? O-Niners, right?
Yep, O-Niners. The O-Niners.
Yeah, I think they handle class very well. Again, it's not like the OC or another show where they just kind of like say, you know, here's all the rich people or Gossip Girl, and we're just going to focus on them. And then the poor people like Dan Humphrey and Gossip Girl are still pretty well off, as we'll see. This show actually shows what it's like to be lower middle class or to be even below that and to be wealthy, and shows the pros and cons of it. So I think they do a really good job with that.
And it doesn't villainize any given one any more than it does the other. It makes them all seem like they're doing something wrong. And it's right, because not one class is the godly one, the one that does everything correct ever in life. So it's really cool that Veronica Mars does that for everyone and doesn't just dehumanize any given group.
And I just like to add that, like, as a Latina, as a Hispanic, I just thought it was so cool how diverse the cast is on Veronica Mars, considering it's like an early 2000s show, because most of the shows coming out then, like, it was just an all-white cast with, like you said, mostly upper middle class, rich, or just upper class people. So that was really interesting to see that Veronica Mars has all different kinds of people in it.
Mm-hmm. I really like that too. I think it's really different. And I think it's another reason why a lot of us can consider this show to have been way before its time. Because you didn't see, at least I didn't, at least that I can remember, I didn't see anything remotely close to this while it was on the air.
And so, you know, it fits a lot of what Teen Wolf's doing nowadays with any one of the LGBT community. And that is because in Teen Wolf, there basically is no homophobia, which unfortunately is still something that exists in a lot of high schools nowadays in our society. But that's what I think Veronica Mars did for these bridging of societies. And even if these things aren't exactly uncommon in high schools, it's still at that time common for, let's just say, someone of Veronica's class and someone of Weevil's class to not get along, you know. But it's just the way they're portrayed in media, and that's why we're saying it's ahead of its time, because like just like Teen Wolf, they are portraying really kind of drastic and very different things in a very calm and lax manner, like they're a non-issue, and that makes them a non-issue.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more, but yes, I think you nailed it. Let's zoom out for a minute. So we touched on class, but let's zoom out and kind of take a look at the episode as a whole. So here's kind of the main plot points or synopsis for this second episode. Credit where credit's due has Wallace and Veronica as established friends as he tries to make her go to a party that weekend. She explains that the class differences in Neptune, and she explains how it's usually between the O-Niners and everyone else, and how she used to actually be one of them. Duncan Kane brings his out-of-town friend Troy Vandegraaff, who we were talking about earlier, to the elite party where we see Logan and his girlfriend Caitlin Ford. Paris Hilton played that role, which we'll definitely talk about later. So the PCHers and the Sheriff's Department break the party up, but not before we see police corruption. Veronica is placed in journalism class, where she has to work on a project with Duncan and be teased by Logan at the same time. Troy hits on Veronica and helps to change her tire when Logan purposefully gives her a flat. So Logan strikes again. Veronica and Duncan drive to a surfing competition that they are reporting on, and on the way back, get stopped by the police. The car that they were driving belonged to Lily and apparently had tickets from the day of her death. It's revealed that Keith and Jake Kane do not get along, because of the way that Keith went after Jake. And the case of the week involves Weevil's grandmother being arrested for credit card fraud because Logan's mother's credit cards had been stolen and used. His grandmother was the housekeeper for the Eccles, so that's why they think it's her. Weevil confesses to stealing the credit cards to get his grandmother out of jail, but Veronica and Logan discover through different means that Caitlin Ford and Weevil's cousin, Chardo, were involved and committed the fraud. The two handle it in very different ways, but both Logan and Weevil treat Chardo unkindly.
More than unkindly, they beat him to a bloody pulp.
Yeah, curb stomp him a little bit.
They do. And that's what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to totally just rip you off of your hosting duties. Sorry, Gabrielle. Wow. Danielle, sorry. Ah,
yeah, people. Do what you have to. Go.
But I think that scene was one of the most poignant of Veronica Mars, where Weevil's cousin is being beaten up because it's realized that he was the one that put both the grandmother and Weevil in jail and et cetera, stole the girlfriend. So I think in the end of the day, the fact that Weevil still had it in him to say yes to his friend, please make sure my cousin isn't beaten to death, make sure that he's held back a little bit, it showed a lot of Weevil's control and his humanity. And if he didn't say that, I would have stopped liking him right then and there. I would have thought of him as a cold, heartless gang member. But thank God he said that line. It's saved a lot of what the show is going to be about, I think, for me. So that's just like super kudos to the writers that they wrote in that make sure he's not, you know, beaten up too much line. It was fabulous because it showed how Weevil is in the position where he's in power in this gang. He has to make sure that the rules are followed according to this gang, and that if you're leaving the gang, you are beaten up really badly. But he also just shows that he's trapped in this. He doesn't want to be here. He wants to get out of it, you know?
Well, I think on that point, we can kind of discuss Weevil, if that's okay, Danielle, and the importance of family to him. Because obviously, oh, yeah. Chardo is a family member. He's his cousin, and he grew up with him in his grandmother's house. But at the end of the day, he considers the PCHers, his biker gang, to be also family. So I think Weevil's emphasis on family and punishment, but you know, a little bit of compassion translates over into a lot of characters that even if they don't like their family members, they're still their family at the end of the day, and they still have to put up with them, and they still love them and show that love.
Yeah, I think this episode, especially like you were saying, it shows Weevil being a family man. It shows that he's not some heartless thug. You know what's important to him, and you know that even if his family does wrong, you know that he just can't turn off his switch, I guess, for family.
And it seems like he's learned that from his grandmother, because his grandmother did say, no, Weevil can take his juvie because he's still 17, but we can't have the cousin do that because he's 18 and he'll be in real jail. And she basically is, choosing the less of two poisons for her gang member, almost children, you know? So she just has a lot to deal with gang members and, family life, but she does it in the best way she knows how to. So that's kind of what she's taught Weevil, you know? Do it the best way you can. You're stuck in the situation, and make sure, A, you're the most powerful if you can be, but B, you're as compassionate as you can be while having to follow those rules.
That made me so angry, though, when she said that.
I mean, it's not nice, but it's like I said, the less of two poisons. It really is. It makes sense.
No, I mean, I understand her. It just made me so angry that she would let somebody take the fall.
Yes.
When she knew he was innocent.
Yes, I agree there. I really do.
But yeah, I think... No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, in the end of the day, I'm glad that justice prevailed, and that regardless of what Weevil's cousin wanted to get away with, he basically couldn't escape from either both the law and the gang. He was going to get caught by either, so... That was kind of, I think, his repercussions of assuming that by having people like his grandmother and Weevil in his life, he could get out of everything. He can't. He still is going to have repercussions for the horrible things he does.
So they didn't catch him, right? The police? So that means that they must have helped him, right? Like Weevil? They must have helped him escape after they beat him up.
Don't react, super fans, but here's my theory. It's that he's still on the loose. He's still being chased. We haven't heard about that in the next two episodes that we're about to cover in the next episode of Rewatchable. But I think that in the end of the day, his plot point will have to come back around, because it's too important to have a character on the run like that, I think, to not have them come back around, you know?
Yeah.
And that's frustrating, I know. I hate when shows do that, when they leave you right on the climax of a storyline and then they drop like a hot pancake and you never hear about it again until six episodes later or something. And you're like, oh, why'd you do that? That's actually something I don't commend when TV shows do, because I think it's a little bit cheap, but that's just me.
Okay, so let's move on to what I think everybody kind of wants to vent about or really talk about, and that is Paris Hilton. Go.
So... Has anyone seen House of Wax?
Nope.
No, I have not.
She did better in House of Wax than she did in this episode, okay?
I thought she was better than what you saw on her reality show. Like, I thought she played the spoiled rich kid really well, because, you know, I don't want to get sued for libel or anything, but that's her persona, honestly, in the press, is that she's the spoiled rich kid. So I don't think it took much acting.
I think she's to the certain point where, unfortunately, her reputation has been ripped apart and brought down to the certain level where you can't really get sued for libel for what she does. You could pretty much say whatever you want about someone that puts themselves in the limelight and does as much stupid as she does. And unfortunately, that does carry over when I think about her in a TV show or a movie. It's so hard to look past her personality flaws when you see her trying to act as a character that is just like her personality. It's a little bit too obvious, if you ask me.
I think it revealed a lot about Logan in this episode, though. That's what I think she was there for. Obviously, she was there for the case of the week and, you know, the whole thing with Chardo and the credit card fraud. But she was also just, you know, to show Logan's moved on from Lily, but has he, you know... who he is as a person.
But was she worth the case of the week? I am starting to see a slight issue with Veronica Mars in cases of the week. I don't want it to become after school specials. I don't think it will, but I think that the issue is going to come in the plot discrepancies, like why does she not show up ever again? I know she's not friends with the O-Niners anymore, but she would still have lasting repercussions on someone. Like perhaps Weevil would be like, hey, that wasn't cool what you did to my cousin, etc., etc. You know, so I just feel like it's a bit of a small issue if characters like her don't show up ever again because they were just that case of the week. But there are two characters coming up in the next two episodes that I feel like are going to come up again, so that may redeem that thought.
Yeah, I think in general, the people who are involved in, you know, whatever case Veronica's involved with that week, they're not super important. And I don't think it hurts the plot if they don't reappear or they don't reappear for a while. But I do think in the first two episodes, the show is kind of getting its groove. And, you know, maybe some of these characters should have reappeared or will reappear. You know, we don't know. But the show, you know, it's the second episode, so it's finding its groove.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons why, I mean, how can I say this? Because Paris Hilton was the person who played this character, I think that's probably one of the reasons why we think about that character so much, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like if it was kind of an unknown, it would kind of be easier to gloss over and not think about ever again.
Good point.
But the fact that it was Paris Hilton, I think that's might be the reason why we're kind of holding on to it and kind of wanting to see her again, even though we don't necessarily like her. She's just one of those people who we know.
And she was well known when she did this episode too, so that's almost a casting issue, not even a plot issue, wouldn't you say?
Yes and no. I feel like this is one of those shows who brings in a celebrity because they have a spot for it. I think it happens once or twice over the course of the whole series. But when the CW was going, Veronica Mars at this point is not on the CW, but when it was going, they would throw in like America's Next Top Model people who won. They would throw them into an episode or like have a random celebrity pop up. So I think that they chose her maybe to get people to watch the show. Like, oh, Paris Hilton is the guest on this show this week. Let's watch it and see what happens.
Right. And it's so new that it needs that kind of...
Like, because this is the second episode, they kind of want people to talk about it and start watching it. So I think that would be an interesting way for them to hook people into it. I think that might be why they chose her.
Wise analysis.
I try. but I mean, other than that, I mean, I don't see any reason why Paris Hilton had to be in it, but I can see why they would want someone like Paris Hilton to be in that.
To survive in this teeny bopper world, you have to have a couple low blows. And if the hardest you're going to hit us with is Paris Hilton, I will forgive you. I absolutely will. I'm talking to the show.
I got it.
Not you guys.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think she was good for what they needed her for, which was probably viewers to some level, and for being this character that we shouldn't really care about or who doesn't really deserve anything that's kind of going on around her. Like, she doesn't deserve to have a plot point or anything like that, if that makes sense.
Yes, and I think that she sets up that episode arc for the rest of the show, and it's important to have someone that you're going to remember, I think, for that. Even if you didn't know who Paris Hilton was, she still would have quite the presence, you know? So that makes me feel like I'm jumping into a rhythm, and maybe this is just the rhythm of Veronica Mars that I have to get used to. I don't want to have to think of it like an after-school special, but I don't think it is, because it doesn't try and teach a lesson. It just tries to solve a certain issue. That's just more of an episode arc, I'd think, rather than an after-school special. But this episode made me feel like it was trying to lead me towards that, and that's why I was a little bit nervous. But I realized that there was no clear answer given in this episode to who was right, who was wrong, the O-Niners, Weevil, Veronica, etc. It just was very difficult to decide who was right in this Romeo-Juliet betrayal love story, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Let's see. What else? Does anybody have like a particular scene that stuck out to them or something that was really interesting?
Oh, wait. Sorry. Did we talk about Duncan? I just wanted to mention, like him in the pilot, he's been redeemed in my eyes in the second episode because what did he say? He said something like, I want a burrito. And for some reason, that just made him into a three-dimensional person for me.
I love that that's the line that did it for you.
I'm like, this guy likes burritos. He must be all right. He's like chill. So
that was cute. Yeah, yeah, he just sit in the lunch in the lunch area. Well, it was probably because he offered it to Logan. That was the part to me that humanized him. I mean, I know it's kind of silly, but like, it really was just kind of like, I don't know, chilling out. And that was our first time seeing him as not someone that's like strung up and so like, I don't know, into the situation. They're just kind of like hanging out and eating burritos. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I like it when he introduces Troy to the O-Niners and, you know, he's kind of giving these old silly quips like, I'm ready to raise the roof. And, you know, just acting silly and acting like a teenage boy for a second. And even though he does introduce Troy, which is interesting because they both are kind of characterized as Veronica's love interest, past and future, I think, you know, Duncan becomes more of a real character in this episode.
And you know what's funny that you were talking about that scene where Duncan's like raised the roof and all that, because this show was still new enough to me that in episode two to see two characters that look as similar as Troy and Duncan do, that I was confused who was talking. I didn't even remember who Duncan was. It was dark and it was in a car, and the quality of these episodes, no matter where you are, I was on Amazon instant streaming and it's still like not the best, so I couldn't really tell what was going on. I couldn't even tell that was Paris Hilton at that bonfire. So I was just confused who Troy was and what his association was with the O-Niners because of all those reasons.
Yeah, I'm rewatching it with my mother, who has never watched it. So I would recommend, you know, if you guys are close with your moms or if you think your mom would love it, like it, to watch it with her. But my mom is like, which one's Troy? Which one's Duncan? And then by the third or fourth episode, she starts to get into it and starts to be able to identify the characters more. So I agree, it is confusing at first.
And that's with any show. It's not Veronica Mars's fault. I mean, it's both a victim of the time for the episode quality that it could even give. And of course, it's just trying to shove in so many characters in the best fashion that it can while spreading them out. You know, that's a difficult game to play. It's a really weird balancing game that I think they played really well with introducing Troy and even Veronica Mars's journalism teacher in the second episode. Those were the only two major characters introduced in this episode, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, kudos to them. I think that was smart for them to hold off on those two characters until episode two, because the relevance is still important, but not as important as, like, let's say, like, the Canes or something, right?
Right. No, exactly.
This is an errant thought, but it's important. Duncan's mother, she was shown in the first episode and was set up to be this horrible witch. And in the second episode, I don't know if she had too much more of an importance, but regardless, I don't know if I like that actress. She is very overdramatic. The way she speaks is a little bit too I'm the upper crust, and it's almost British, right?
Well, I think her character is supposed to be dramatic, and you're not really supposed to like her. Veronica doesn't like her, and we see it. We see the show kind of through her eyes. So, you know, Veronica has this voiceover, and we know she doesn't like Celeste Kane. We know Celeste Kane doesn't like her. So, you know, why should she be portrayed in this favorable way? We will see her vulnerable at times, but I never felt sympathetic to her, at least in the first two episodes, and I don't think we're supposed to.
Tell me if you guys agree with this. She reminds me of the actress, of the acting teacher from High School Musical. She, like, acts that dramatic to me.
Mrs. Darby, is that her name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You must perform in the theater! I'm just like, oh, I'm just smacking my forehead.
Well, hopefully you'll feel like she gets better in terms of that. But I do agree. I do think that she has a flair for the dramatic. And she... You'll kind of get a sense of what drives her and what makes her so dramatic, I guess, where it might start to feel more comfortable. But I could see how you could see her as being, like, overacting.
So maybe we're just talking about that's her face and that's the way the actress interprets how Celeste would act, right? Oh, wait, don't answer that. It's a spoiler. Don't say anything.
Okay. Mom's the word.
Mom's the word. You're right.
All right. And I guess let's just wrap up episode two with a little... Do we want to talk a little bit more about Troy, or do we think that we kind of nailed it?
I think I can talk about him more, like, in the following episodes when he does more stuff.
Yeah.
I agree. I think we all agreed he's kind of swarmy. And as Mitch said, and when we were discussing episode one, he's just a little too sure of himself. But, you know, it's kind of nice to see Veronica a little softer, you know, as she is being flirted with and as she's kind of taken aback that she's still desirable by someone. I think it's nice to see that side of her.
All right. So then let's move into favorite lines from Credit Where Credit's Due. Mine actually involves Troy, and I don't necessarily love him. He's not my favorite character, but I do like his interaction with Veronica when he goes to help her change her flat, and he says flat, and Veronica just retorts immediately with, just as God made me.
I love that line.
It's one of my favorite. Mm-hmm. I can't even do it justice. I apologize for that. But
you have to do a pretty good Kristen Bell impersonation. I was impressed.
I can?
Yeah, that really sounded like her.
Hmm. Put that on my resume or something.
Just as God made me. Like you have that little nasal to it.
Oh, no.
No, it sounds good. That's when you're trying, you know? It's not like your normal voice.
Yes, let's go with that. Let's go with the fact that I was trying. Mitch, what was your favorite?
Okay, so my favorite line of 102 was, be back by the end of the period. And remember that we're a multicultural school with a diverse population of students from a wide range of socioeconomic backgrounds. Basically, don't take pictures of just your friends, or don't just interview your friends. And she was talking to the fabulous Paris Hilton because she was just so excited to go and interview her friends at gym class so that she could just get the 09ers' opinion on whatever article she was doing. And that was just such a testament to Miss Dent and how she's not going to take any explicitive from anyone. She's going to basically tell you like it is, and you better take it.
That's exactly how she is. She's awesome. Ariana, favorite line?
I'm going to have to steal yours, Danielle. That was my favorite, too.
Way back then, for stealing my other ones for the pilot episode.
Okay, call me perverted, but she's not really that flat. She really isn't. I'm sorry. It's not like she's like large bosomed woman, but
she's petite. Yeah,
she's petite. She's not, but she's not like preteen. By the way, that line makes her sound. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it's funny, but I just look at her and I'm just like, I mean, you're developed. You're a woman. You know.
Well, compared to we see in the flashbacks of Lily with at the car wash that Lily more developed and more just takes ownership of her sexiness, so maybe that's what Veronica's kind of referring to in her perception of herself.
Much like Allie and Pretty Little Liars, though, that's a lot of the same themes, that the dead friend in the past is sexually active and knows what she's doing, and she is going to tell you all of the best secrets in the world, and is just so sexy, and you love her, and you just want to be her. So I like that those two themes are overarching for both of these shows, because it's a good foil for our protagonists.
So Pretty Little Liars borrowed from Veronica Mars.
Woo! I'd say they would, yeah. Oh, then we're getting into who the books, though, because Pretty Little Liars did write their books, and it might have been before Veronica Mars. Maybe it did. I don't know that timeline.
I know nothing about Pretty Little Liars, so I can't help there.
We're playing chicken and the egg, guys.
All right, Gabrielle, favorite line.
So two, again, you'll find that it's very hard for me to pick. So they're both by Veronica again. And the first is her talking to Wallace about asking him to steal someone's, attendance record. She says very matter-of-factly, am I asking you to retrieve a nuclear warhead? I just thought it's very witty. It's very Veronica. And it kind of sums up their friendship very well, that she will ask him for favors and she doesn't really think it's a big deal a lot of the time. And then the other one is Veronica to Logan when they're in journalism class. And Veronica says very sweetly and snarkily, I'm here so I can be closer to you. And I don't do a good Kristen Bell imitation, but how she says it is just very spot on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny whenever she knocks back at Logan. He deserves it. He needs a little bit of that. Someone to knock down his ego.
He totally does. I love him, but he totally does. Maybe that's why I love him, because he does.
Because he's not perfect. Because he's not Troy. The gleaming knight in shining armor still. There's something on. You can't wait to find out what's happening with Troy. That's my most excited plot point coming up. I cannot wait to hear what skeletons he's hiding in his closet, because he's not like as perfect as Logan tries to be or anything, you know.
No comment.
No comment is good. I like no comment.
Just to clarify, the first Pretty Little Liars book came out in 2006, whereas Veronica Mars premiered in 2004. So Pretty Little Liars, you know, was likely to have seen Veronica Mars and take from it a little bit.
Veronica Mars was the chicken. Pretty Little Liars was the egg. That's so weird that that makes sense.
Okay, does anybody have a favorite scene out of these last two episodes that we just watched? Mine was definitely Veronica and Wallace discussing their Friday night plans, and Veronica referring to Wallace's life as a nonstop Nelly video. But that's just me.
So mine was in 101. Veronica and her dad are eating dinner in the office, and they're just discussing macaroni and cheese and powdered or normal cheese. And I agree, the powdered is so much better, and she's blowing them off. And the way that they had their conversations was so cute, because she'll have one tangent and he'll be on his own, and they're both talking to each other at the same time. But they're more talking at each other as opposed to talking with each other. So it was just kind of cute.
Mine was in episode one when Veronica and Weasel are having like their showdown outside the motel, because I like laughed out loud when I found out that dog was named Backup and then it like jumps out. It's so funny to me. And I also really liked in episode two how they have like Weevil hanging out at his grandma's, because it's so stereotypical, but it's like so true. Mexicans love their grandma.
Aw. They're abuelas. Abuelitas.
Abuelita.
That's cute. It's cute. And she was such a sweetie. I loved her. I know she was kind of like weird, like you were saying, Ariana, about that. Weevil can stand in juvie for 4 months, but like, I think she was just like so cute when she saw Weevil, and she was just like, oh, come in. I had to make you food. I was like, oh, grandma.
And then my favorite scenes, in the first episode, when Veronica confronts Weevil at school, when he approaches her and Wallace with the piece of the H's, and they're talking about taking a ride. And then the second episode, it would be Veronica and her dad, Keith, at the Neptune Grand, pretending to be a distraught father and pregnant daughter. I just thought it's so funny, and it just shows how well they work together.
Yes. I love that one, too.
Good pick. I think you have the best right there, honestly. That was just so cool.
Yep, I think you win.
Yay!
All right. Do we want to do just a few fun facts before we sign off and say goodbye?
Sure, why not?
All right. First fun fact, Amanda Seyfried wasn't supposed to be in Veronica Mars as much as she was. But she was so great in the pilot that Rob Thomas had her shoot more as Lily. I think she was in it like 3 or 4 more times than she was supposed to be. So that was kind of cool.
Wow.
And the next fun fact, if I can take this one, relates mm-hmm. to Jace Doring, who plays Logan Eccles, and Teddy Dunn, who played Duncan Kane. They actually ended up auditioning for each other's roles, which is pretty interesting. And Logan originally was supposed to only be recurring. But as we all know, he becomes a series regular, and, you know, as we can tell, he's just, at least from the first two episodes, he seems to be becoming an integral part of Veronica Mars.
And also, Rob Thomas likes to work with a lot of the same people. So throughout the Veronica Mars series, you will see a lot of Burning Love and Party Down faces that would look familiar to fans of those two. So that's interesting, too. And the last thing I found right before we started recording, Rob Thomas had tweeted at about 11 a.m. Central Time that Veronica Mars was voted number one female badass. So
cool.
Agree. Yeah, I totally agree, because I think she is. She's one of my spirit animals. So
yeah, she's fun. She's spunky.
She's so spunky.
She must have, like, pepper spray or something, too. Like, she just has, like, so many tricks up her sleeve. She has a freaking switchblade, too. She's just gonna cut down Wallace, so she has, like,
stun gun.
Yeah, everything. Stun gun. She has, like, a whole Batman thingamajigger. What is it?
Tool belt? Something belt. Something belt.
Utility belt.
Utility belt.
You know any shows I watch where a character is Batman and has a utility belt? It's just such a common like thing to like say about a character, because just it's there's no other way to describe other than Batman.
No, it's just Batman
for real.
He's the original. All right, so that wraps up our very long discussion, but needed. It needed to be long, of episodes 1 and 2 of Veronica Mars. In the next podcast, we will be talking about episodes 3 and 4, which are Meet John Smith and The Wrath of Khan. If you would like to contact us, give us any sort of input about the show or any of your thoughts, things that you agree with, don't agree with, or wish we would talk about further, let us know. Please do. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter handle is @re_watchable. You can also leave comments on the podcast posts on Hypable. We will be reading those, as you could tell from the beginning of this episode. And also, if you like us, post a review on iTunes. We would love to get your feedback in any sort of way, and that would be a really good one. And then other Veronica Mars fans can find us too. So I think that's it for this episode. So yeah, would everybody like to say goodbye?
Aww.
Until we meet again.
Bye, guys. Aww. We'll see you soon, though. Don't you worry.
Bye, guys. You're welcome to follow me on Twitter, Gabrielle_gold. And thank you so much for listening to our podcast.
Bye. Hey, I'm Adriana.
I'm Mitch. You can follow me on Twitter @MitchClow.
And Ariana has a Twitter, too. I believe it's Ariana Stark, correct?
Yeah. You can find it on Rewatchable after you tweet us lots of wonderful things.
Yes.
Because we want to hear from you.
We do.
Yep. And I'm Danielle. And you can follow me on Twitter at Zim, Z-I-M-M, 102090. I'll be there, and I will be ready to quote things back and forth with you or answer any questions or just fangirl in general. So this is all of us saying goodbye for now, fellow marshmallows. We'll see you next time.
Keep on marching.
Keep on marching. 'They gave me a choice. I could stand by my dad or stand by Duncan and my best friend's family. I chose dad. It's a decision I live with every day. And you want to know the kicker? I don't even know what's true anymore. Maybe everyone else is right. Maybe dad screwed up the investigation. Maybe I gave up my circle of friends, my life, over an error in dad's judgment. Be cool, soda pop.
Kristen Bell, everyone.